Our speaker this morning is a 1973 graduate of Hurricane High School, and many of his friends remember him as Tex, a nickname that he picked up when he moved here from Texas back many years ago. No doubt, Tex is a country boy. Tex lived out on Buff Creek, West Virginia, where they farmed, and that's where he grew up, so he's definitely a country boy. He was a hard worker. He was a distance runner at Hurricane High School. He excelled in cross country and track. He earned a scholarship to Rice University, where he majored in physical education. He ran cross country and track at the university. Tex has traveled all over the world as a Navy pilot, a spacecraft engineer. He has flown over 3,000 hours in war and peacetime operations. He has designed satellites and built classified systems to track terrorists. Tex was a highly decorated naval officer, an astronaut candidate finalist, before retiring to Huntsville, Alabama, where he lives with his wife, Cindy, and their four children. Tex speaks around the United States promoting his award-winning books and his Christian lifestyle. He is co-author of a novel with Oliver North that will be released in the fall of 2009. He is presently employed as vice president of a science and engineering firm in Huntsville, Alabama, where he leads the development of advanced technology products. Graduates, Tex is living proof that a graduate from Hurricane High School or Putnam County can be successful. Tex lives his Christian beliefs daily. It is an honor and a privilege for me to call him a friend and a brother in Christ, and to introduce to you our speaker, Mr. Austin Tex Boyd. Tex?
Am I live? Yep, sounds like it. Well, good morning. It is a huge honor to be here today, and it's fun to see the red and white again. I sat in Coach's Sunday school class, and there was a little bit of a disagreement about whether Marshall or West Virginia University. And in Alabama, all they ask you, the first question when you move to Alabama is, who you for? And it's either Auburn or Alabama. So I'm glad to see that kind of spirit's alive up here, too, and it's good to be around the graduates. And it's good to be home. I'd really like to thank you for the welcome to come. This is very unusual for me to get an invitation to come join a church like this, but especially to come back to family in Hurricane. Now, they say it wrong down south. They keep saying hurricane, but we all know that that's wrong, right? My wife and daughter would have liked to have been here today. We just got back from a 12-day trip to the Holy Land at the encouragement of Coach, and so they were completely worn out, and they're still on Tel Aviv time, so if you'll forgive them for not being here. I'd like to thank Coach and Joy for having me at the house, and Dr. Lutz for opening up the podium today. As you can see from your sermon bulletin, I'm going to talk today about making a difference. And I'm here to talk about it in the context of you. Whether you realize it or not, this congregation, many people in this congregation have been responsible for what I've been able to accomplish. And this is my chance to come back and say thank you. It's also a chance to share with you that the incredible life-changing impact that each of you is having on other people through me. And if you get any message out of this today, it's to understand that you might touch someone in a very small way that will have a very large impact that ripples for generations. And I hope that you'll see through the impact that you've had on my life how that could be. I promise you, many of you have made a huge impact and have been responsible for any of the successes that I might have been able to accomplish. As an added bonus today, you're going to learn that Jim McGee is a great-great-grandfather. All right? He didn't know that, and I'll share that with you as you go along. So that's called foreshadowing in the novel world. That's to keep you awake until the end of the sermon, so you say, I want to know about his great-great-grandchildren. You'll also learn that Flora Francis and that Gloria Maddox and Slick Ellis, among others, have inspired my daughter and my sons, and their impact on me is having an impact on my children many years later. You know, when Paul preached in the cities about Asia and Rome, he often used his testimony as the basis for his preaching. And so I'd like to use my testimony, like he did about the road to Damascus, I'd like to use my testimony as a way of sharing with you what's happened, to follow his example and share my background. It's important that you understand that each of you that touched me in high school has had an impact on a lot of people you've never, ever met. And that's sort of what makes you those great grandparents. So I hope you'll take away the message today is that your impact on other people can spread like a virus. A little thing that you do, and you'll hear about some little things that made a big impact, little things that you do can ripple through years and years and years and hundreds of thousands of people. And that's what's happened with me. I wasn't raised in a Christian home. Many of you who knew my mom and dad knew that they were real active people in terms of work type of activism and ecology activism and being active in politics, but they were not active Christians. Mom and dad were raised in churches as children, mom in the Episcopal Church and dad in the Presbyterian Church, but we were not raised in a Christian home. We were a loving family, a very tight family. We didn't have a lot of the problems that you might think a purely secular family might have. Frankly, everybody used to look at us and say, boy, what a perfect family. Of course, we knew inside there were the disagreements, but generally speaking, everything was going pretty well. I thought that it was normal to live like that. And I have to say that my greatest regret, having lived in Hurricane, West Virginia, was that I never darkened the door of a church. I didn't know Christ as a young man, and I am so happy for those of you who are graduates that you have a chance to know the Lord, because that'll really make a big difference as you get your start in life. I do remember as a small child having attended a few services in the Episcopal Church with my mom. I sometimes sensed that we were going just in case the lightning bolt might strike, you know, just trying to be on the safe side, cover the bets. And I do remember in third grade, back when the Gideons were allowed to distribute Bibles in schools, that when they brought the little red Bibles around, one of the girls said in my class, well, you're an atheist, so you don't get one. I can still remember that moment. And I still have that Bible, all right? It flew with me all 3,000 hours wherever I went. When I was 12 years old, I had my own Damascus Road experience. And it's interesting how God works in the lives of people who are not yet Christians. When I talk about this outside of church, people look at me like I'm a little bit fetched and touched, but that's okay, because here I'm among brothers and sisters in Christ. And I'll tell you, I was out feeding rabbits one day in Lamarck, Texas. And everything got quiet. And I sensed, almost heard words inside of me, and it scared the willies out of me when it happened. The very words were, you will do something to make a difference. Now that was a spooky sensation. Here you're out feeding rabbits, and all of a sudden it's like, whoop, and play the tune, but I sensed that something was going to happen in my life, and I'd always had a dream of being an astronaut. I was growing up south of the Space Center. It's 1966, which is a long time ago for you graduates, but that was for some of you that you may remember were in the moon phase, getting ready to go through what's called the Gemini program, and so I wanted to be an astronaut. You're going to make a difference. I thought, well, something that I'm going to do in life tied to space is going to have a life-changing impact on me or someone else. Remember, I wasn't raised as a Christian. I was not in the church. But I do believe today that God was speaking to me. And I believe that God calls people who are not yet Christians through the action of the Holy Spirit to try to bring them to Him. In fact, we all pray that people would be drawn to Him, right? So you'll do something to make a difference. Now, I was just kind of an average Joe. You know, I was in trouble for throwing rocks through school windows, and I was in trouble for stealing candy bars out of grocery stores. But there wasn't really anything more remarkable about me than that. In fact, I didn't have very many friends. I had very few friends. A lot of people kidded me that the only guy that was a real friend of mine was a serial rapist, which is not a good thing to be. But, you know, here's the kid who didn't have any friends, and I didn't have any friends, and that happens sometimes, right? People hook up who shouldn't hook up. So here's this kid who was befriending me. I was a nobody. I'd never done anything in team sports. My parents wouldn't let me play in any kind of organized activities. And I just felt like a no one. And so here I have this little promise now. I've got this Damascus Road-like experience that you're going to do something to make a difference. And I had all of a sudden this gem that I could hold on to. Hey, I'm going to be something in life. I'm not just going to be a nobody. And I felt called in that moment to be an astronaut for whatever reason. Now, I'll tell you what, the first time I shared that dream about being an astronaut, and I'm 12 years old, and I'm a nobody, everybody laughed, right? And so lesson learned number one was, if you have a dream and nobody believes in you, don't share it, because it's a crushing blow to a young kid to share something like that and everybody say, it'll never happen. When I was 16, we moved to West Virginia. We came to Hurricane. First place I ever lived was in the basement of the Walmart. Okay, for those of you who are old enough, remember we used to have a motel up on top of the mountain. And so we lived in that motel for a while and made a decision as a family that we would find a farm where we could live and spend time together much more closely than we had in Texas. And as we were looking around for a farm, Mother took me aside one day, and we're looking out over Hurricane, sitting at the floor of our room, and she said, "Austin, you can start over here. Nobody knows you. Your history is a blank slate. You can be whoever you want to be, and you can accomplish whatever you want to accomplish." You know, that's kind of the way it is with Christ, isn't it? It's a blank slate, and we can start over. I have a hard time talking about that memory without tearing up. My mother's passed away 2 years ago, and many of you were in prayer for her as she was in her last days. But Mom was telling me that I could leave behind a past that I wanted to forget. It was a good family. There wasn't any personal life, though, to speak of. You know, I didn't have anything to crow about as a kid, and I just felt like I wasn't going anywhere. All I'd done is make grades in school, and I felt like I was, fading under the wall. So for me, Hurricane was Shangri-La. This was the place to begin again. And, you know, a lot of people kind of poke fun at the country. They poke fun at West Virginia and Alabama and places like that, and they say, well, you know, what good ever comes out of the country? Well, let me tell you, for me, this was heaven, and in more ways than just being a brand. On the first day of school at Big Red, brand new high school, so that dates me again. I was back there when the school opened. I can remember the first thing I saw as I walked into the boys' locker room. Coach had a big sign on the wall. He had one of these glass-walled window offices that you have in a gymnasium locker room. And it was Gale Sayers' philosophy, and it says, "God is first, my friends and family are second, and I am third." Keith Drake's nodding because he remembers that. You know, that was Coach's philosophy. And I saw that, and I can still remember the moment that I saw that, the impact that it made on my life. God is first, my family and friends are second, and I'm third. Here was this jolly but disciplined man, okay? He's a happy camper, but this is the way you're going, right? That's Coach, you know. He's going to make sure that we all toe the line, but he was a friend to everybody. And he was a friend to me, and all of a sudden I was family because I was his student. He didn't know me from Adam's house cat, but I'm in his gym class, and all of a sudden I'm family. And I had to have a nickname from day one, and it was Coach, okay? From the very moment I met him, for the next 37 years, I've been that. You can always make a difference in very little ways, and Coach made a huge impact. He made me feel 10 feet tall. I had a new name, I was starting over, and he liked me. That started the transformation on day one, and I really appreciate that, Coach. Now, Gloria Maddox, who's a member of this congregation, shares some of the blame, too. We'd been in Hurricane for about a month or two, and this opportunity came up for an exam called the Conservation Quiz. Now, I didn't know squat about conservation. I'd watched my mother, who was real busy in the Texas air control battles back in the chemical plants of the Texas City area, and didn't know anything about it, but I said, well, I got to take this test. And I thought, there's no way I can do anything that will pay dividends here. But Gloria encouraged me. She says, Austin, take the test. To give it a try. Remember, here's a wallflower who didn't think it could amount to anything, and she said, try it out. I took that test, not thinking I had a chance, and it turns out I had the highest grade in the county. Now, it was a little thing for Gloria Maddox to give me that exam, but that was the first thing I ever won. I won that exam, and I went off to become a camper at conservation camp, which inspired me to meet other people that were doing things, and they were all making things happen in their life. And so it's a big deal, right? But remember, here's a kid with no successes to his name. It was monumental, life-changing, because she encouraged me to try. And then there's Flora Francis. About a month ago, or a month later after this exam, it was time to elect student officers. And I'd never run for anything. And Flora encouraged me to get out there and run for student government. And I said, there's not a chance of a snowball in a supernova of me ever getting elected anything. And I did. And I would not have tried had Flora and Gloria and Jim not been there to push me. But the most important moment of my life happened in the spring of 1971, thanks to Coach McGee. We were having an intramural high school track competition. I don't know if y'all still do intramural track at Hurricane High School, but we were having one. And there was a fellow by the name of Turkey, that was his nickname. And Coach came up to me in his effervescent way, and he grabbed me and he says, Tex, buddy, run the half mile. And I said, "Coach, I've never been around the track once. There is no way I could run a half a mile." He says, "Tex, buddy, you can do it. You don't want Turkey to win because nobody else tried, do you?" Well, on the strength of the confidence of Jim McGee and nothing more, I said yes. I went out and ran that half mile, and I beat Turkey soundly. In fact, I discovered that I was Forrest Gump of 1971. And that started my track career. The next season, I was running for Slick Ellis on the cross-country team. 2 years later, I qualified for state. Remember, I'd never won anything. I'd never been allowed to participate in a team sport because they were considered bad for children by my family. And all of a sudden, I had a chance to be part of a team. And if you've never been part of a team, never been part of athletics, you don't realize what incredible leadership happens inside that team environment. One encouraging voice, Coach Jim McGee, made all the difference. And that led to college and an experience that changed my life to come to know the Lord. So I track my spiritual journey back to that moment when he said, "Tex, buddy, give it a try." In the spring of my junior year, my dad and I were out digging post holes. Now, those of you who have a farm know that digging post holes in West Virginia is akin to purgatory, okay? You need a breaker bar to break the sandstone, and you need a dented old post hole digger to bring up the charge, and then you just keep that up all day long until you make one measly little hole. And we'd made the decision to put sawed off pine trees in these post holes, and they turned into beetle dust within a year. That notwithstanding, we're digging along, and my dad, who's a man of few words, said, "Austin, I'm not paying for college." And that was the extent of it. Flora Francis saved me. I was in her office one day, and I said, "Dad's not paying for college. I want to go. What do I do?" And she encouraged me, said, "Austin, don't give up. It can be done." She showed me how to make the applications. She showed me how to take care of the scholarship applications and the walked me through the SATs and the ACTs and all that garbage that you guys have been dealing with for last year. And I had a chance to apply for a Navy scholarship. The Vietnam War was raging. I had a number 39 draft pick. And I didn't want to go to war, but I said education's more important than fighting, so I'm going to go get a degree, and then I'll go fight if I have to. Through a series of remarkable events, this college scholarship came through, and I ended up at Rice University, where my granddad had graduated 50 years earlier as a center on the Rice University football team. So I said, I'm going to go to Rice and be a college athlete too. I wanted to run. After 2 seasons of competing for Coach Ellis and for Coach McGee, I wanted to be a collegiate letterman just like my granddad. And I was invited through a lot of running to walk on to the cross-country team. We had an internationally ranked team that ran some of world record races. And they were so fast that I just really was, I was a slow man out there, but I was on the team. That's what mattered. So I decided my top priority was to now try to make that college letter. And I put everything that is running, put running ahead of everything. And sometimes when you put the wrong thing as the top priority, the rest of your life falls apart. You ever had that happen? Well, that's what happened to me. My life started to spiral out of control because it was all about running. I decided that I wasn't there to get a degree. I was there to become a letterman, and I was going to do what it took to be the best runner. So I decided to follow Jeff Wells, who was our number one runner. He's an Olympian in 1980. And as I followed Jeff, I said, I'll eat like Jeff, I'll sleep like Jeff, I'll run with Jeff, I'll stay up with Jeff, I will study when Jeff studies, and where he goes on his free time, I will be his shadow. And one day he invited me to one of these things called a Bible study. So we were sitting in a Bible study, and Jeff was reading from some material by Bill Bright of the Campus Crusade and listening to a tape. And in that, he was walking through what are called the four spiritual laws. Anybody ever seen the four spiritual laws booklet out there, Campus Crusade? And he was practicing on me, and he asked, "Austin, is there anything that would stop you from making a decision today to accept Jesus into your heart?" And I said, "No, I want to do that." Well, Jeff's jaw hit the floor because he thought I was a Christian, and he was just practicing for his witnessing out on the street and didn't realize that I wasn't a Christian. I was just a nice guy going to hell. You know, I was just walking along and doing all the right things, right? I became a Christian that day, and it's really important to realize that I did not run at Rice except for having been focused on distance running from high school. And I was focused on distance running at high school because Jim McGee took the time to ask me if I wanted to run in that intramural half mile. A very little thing in his life, but that led through a series of paths to me accepting Christ as my Savior. Jeff told me as part of that presentation that God had a plan for my life. So now swing back 7 years to my 12-year-old days when I felt that God was telling me, or someone was telling me, you'll make a difference. And now I realize that I'd been called at an early age to do something to make a difference. And I'd always wanted to be an astronaut. And so I sensed that God was calling me toward space. But now instead of trying hard on my own to do it, now I knew God had a plan. And if I would just seek after him earnestly, he would reward us, like it says in Hebrews. And so I decided to start following God. And if it was in his plan that I would get into the astronaut program, that's where I'd go. Now, when Jillian had her presentation earlier this morning, we read from Corinthians. And so I had it in my speech, so I'm going to read it again, right? But it's not New Living. This is NIV. Do you not know that all runners run? In a race, all runners run, but only one gets the prize. Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. So I went into the strict training to become an astronaut, but not to get the prize of astronaut, but to follow God's will. And if that's where he took me, so be it. Nothing was going to stand in the way. Now, it says in Hebrews, in the faith chapter, again in chapter 11, that without faith it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. I felt God had called me to a tough path to be an astronaut. Everyone was saying no, and I could have said, I'll show them, but I didn't, because I'd learned through Jeff and through the life witness of Coach McGee that what you say is, if it's God's will, if it's in his plan, it'll happen. And so I just have to be available. It also says in Luke's gospel, what's impossible with man is possible with God. So I grabbed a hold of that promise. Now, you remember Forrest Gump again, right? Forrest is that go, Forrest, go. And how many times did he cross the country? Y'all remember the movie? I think he crossed 4 times, something like that. So I was sort of like Forrest. I applied for the astronaut program 8 times. Matter of fact, there's only 2 people ever applied that many times, me and Mike Foreman. Mike was the guy that installed Dexter on the space station back in April. He was a close personal friend of mine. By God's grace, through lots and lots and lots of trying and trying and trying, and a lot of doors that were opening for flight school and for test flying and for a lot of combat operations, I was selected as a semifinalist in 90 and again in 1992. And in 1994, I got this amazing call that says, we've asked you to come down and be one of 100 people who will interview for one of 20 spots on the astronaut corps. And I said, man, here we are 28 years later since I was that 12-year-old. At age 40, I get the call to go to Houston for the magic interview. There's no doubt in my mind that I was meant for Houston. But you know what? God had other plans. And doesn't he sometimes? Sometimes he has other plans. For whatever reason, even though they said I was the top candidate that year, there was a budget cut. They only took 6 people. There was a person at Houston who didn't really like my application, didn't like me. For whatever reason, it wasn't in God's plan that I get selected as an astronaut. Now, I didn't stop trying. I kept trying in 1996 and 1998, run, Forrest, run, right? And eventually, my wife was getting tired of this Forrest Gump thing, okay? She had endured 14 moves in 20 years, and she suffers from a medical disorder known as anxiety disorder. So watching friends die in the space program, watching friends die as aviators, watching all of our houses come and go and all the moves and all the damage that comes with that, she'd finally reached the point that she was breaking down. And I had to make a decision. Does Cindy come first or does astronaut come first? And we decided to put Cindy first, and that was the best decision I ever made. But when I walked away from astronaut, I didn't walk away from the love of chasing the astronaut. I didn't walk away from the passion, and I still had that 12-year-old dream. What am I going to do with myself? How am I going to make a difference? We moved to Huntsville, Alabama first, found a job second, and I decided that I just couldn't get this out of me. If you remember the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the guy's building that great big dirt mountain on top of his table, and he just can't get that vision out of his head. So I can't get this astronaut thing out of me, so I decided to write about it. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I said, I'll write a novel about a guy who walks the same path that I've walked. Now, when I announced that I was going to write a novel, I got a predictable response, right? Oh, you'll never be able to accomplish that. You'll never finish it. You'll never publish it. No one will want to ever read it. And so I just kept that to myself, and I worked on that for 10 years. But in God's timing, back in 1996, I had 5 publishers who competed to take that book, and one publisher paid me a lot of money and won it. And since then, we've been blessed to sell three more books, and we have another seven on the way. So I'm in a little forest chapel when that first book got sold, and I'm praying, God, why is it that after all these years where I felt you were calling me to be an astronaut, I spent all the time chasing that path, and this one's working? And I had the second Damascus Road experience. In a quiet redwood forest chapel, I heard God's words, and he said, this is what I have prepared for you to do. It is time. Now, I know how Moses felt, because it was 40 years from that 12-year-old experience until that experience where I understood why God had called me to walk that astronaut path. I was not called to a destination. I was called to a journey. And he calls all of us to journeys, not destinations. He called me to walk the path of astronaut in order to be able to write about it. And not because I'd spend the rest of my life being a space version of Robert Ludlum or Tom Clancy, but because I needed the first book to get out there so that I could sell the next book and the next one and start to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. God put me on a path to write. I thought he was putting me on a path to astronaut. He's got a great sense of humor, you know? The path started in Coach McGee's locker room. God is first. My family and friends are second. I am third. Tex, buddy, run the half mile. That one touch by Jim McGee made all the difference. And when I talk to you about making a difference, maybe you can touch someone like Jim did. So now, after years of asking, what's your will for his life, I understand that God rewards those who earnestly seek after him. You can look back through all the open doors in your life if you trust that God will reward you if you seek him, and you can see his hand at work. You know, it's real hard to see the future, isn't it? But you can look back through all those open doors, and you know that God had a hand in them. I told you that Coach McGee has some great-great-grandchildren. My brother and sister, who have come to know the Lord now because I was able to share it with them because he first shared it with me. And their children know the Lord. And their children's children will be raised in a Christian home. Postal clerks and UPS drivers and a lady in San Carmito and women who've been going to California women's conferences and recently some prison inmates have all come to know the Lord because either they read something in the book or I had a chance to talk to them, and then they've gone off and shared it with someone else. That impact all started in Coach McGee's locker room 37 years ago. These are Jim McGee's spiritual great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, and each of us can have that same kind of impact on the world. You know, all the folks that have come to know Christ through Billy Graham started generations earlier spiritually through a shoe salesman who shared Christ so that Billy Sunday and Billy Graham and many others would be able to share Christ with millions of people. One word, one touch, one encouragement may be all it takes to put that process in motion. For me, it happened right here in Hurricane, West Virginia. So I'd encourage you to use spiritual eyes. Look at the legions of angels that are sitting around First Baptist Hurricane, that are here supporting you and keeping the enemy at bay so that you can touch someone, encourage someone, and lead them. And I want you to do this encouraging and this leading and this helping with faith. Remember that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. I can prove to you by pointing at my life that in faith, his faithful guidance of me has made all the difference. And now I'd like to just tell you that there may be someone in this congregation who feels the same call that I felt when I first met Coach, who feels the same call that I felt when I talked to Jeff Wells at Rice. If you've been led to know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, if you want to stand up and be counted and join us today, I'd encourage you to come forward now and meet with Dr. Lutz. And there may be someone in this congregation who feels a very strong call to rededicate themselves to the witness of being out there for the good news, or who feels that they want to transfer their letter from another church and come to this church as a church body. Whatever that reason might be, or if you're just in special need of prayer, please come down. We'd like to talk to you. And I want you to know that you can all make a difference. You can stand up and be counted today. You can share a word of encouragement or a word of counsel with someone in the days to come. You can be what Jim McGee and Gloria Maddox and Flora Francis were for me 37 years ago. You can change the world with a hug. I promise this is true. You did it for me. Thank you.